That's what you wanted, Alley-Oop, when you sent in your Taylor feedback.
That's really...
You wanted me to talk about Super Mario. I'm on the East Coast, so I have to say Super Mario now.
There's a lot of intersectionality in the Venn diagram of Taylor Swift fans and Super Mario Brothers 3 fans. Hey, I'm Nicole.
And I'm Mark.
And this is Nevermind the Music. What are we talking about today, Mark?
The people's questions and comments, Nicole.
The people.
This is mailbag episode number 2 of season 1 of Nevermind the Music.
Love that.
Thank you, everybody, for sending things in.
We record these episodes pretty far in advance, so it's been really fun to listen back to them as they're being, I don't know, broadcast? Would that be dropped? What would you say?
Published?
Yeah. Yeah, either way. I've almost written in with some feedback several times. Like, do you guys notice I say sure a lot?
Sure.
Like, a lot.
I haven't noticed that.
Oh, you will now.
Should I leave them in, or do I have to spend hours of my life editing them out?
Well, I always feel like the first couple episodes, I feel like you did edit out a lot of my shores and my likes and my clicks. And now I think you've gotten lazy.
Your mouth clicks, I try to edit out. You do a lot of mouth clicking.
I do a lot of pen clicking. Like, can you hear this?
Mouth clicks and pen clicks. I'm sure. I'll leave it in. I will say, earlier on, I did edit out more of the ums and stuff like that. Now I mostly just edit for content. Like, that was boring. Cut it. As opposed to a little bit of a stutter or whatever. Whatever. Yeah. They know I'm from SoCal. They know you wish you were from SoCal because you say like more than me. But sure, now I'll never be able to unhear sure.
It's really bad.
I don't even know. But
you edit out too much of funny stuff. And you take like liberties with the preambles that you say things that you undermine me.
That's my prerogative, right?
You undermine me a lot in those. And like, we're friendly. I'm not mad about it.
Not yet.
But sometimes I'm like, Mark, I can't even defend myself.
Hey, I promise if you record a thing and you want me to put it in, I'll put it in every time.
My recordings always sound like I'm in the cave somewhere.
Yeah, you can do better, though. You just don't record in a cave.
Right. That's my problem. I've been going to the cave to record, so.
Send it in. Well, you too can contribute to our growing co-host rivalry, folks. For our next feedback episode, which will be a few months from now, we do a few of them a year. You can get us questions in via email, nevermusicpod@gmail.com.
Yes.
Or the Lorehounds Discord.
You can hit us up on Discord.
Go to thelorehounds.com, and because we are, of course, a part of the lovely The Lorehounds Network.
Yeah.
And there is a link on that website to get access to the Discord, and it's open for everybody. And there's a lot of discussion, not only about our stuff, but of course, whatever awesome TV shows the Lorehounds are covering.
Yeah, they cover
at
a lot
moment.
Of good, like, nerd adjacent content and not like, I've been really into The Last of Us, really enjoying their content on that. I really got into their content on Severance. That was a great show that we were following. I know you've been really active in the Wheel of Time conversations over there.
Yeah, that just wrapped up. Yeah, the not just the Discord, but being on them. We should say, like, we're 2/3 the way through the season, maybe at this point.
Yeah.
Being a part of this network, it's been a blast.
It's been super
talk
fun.
About stuff that I'm not actually trained but have strong opinions on, which is always a good way to get in trouble. I've gotten to guest on The Wheel of Time, Severance. I was on one of the Lord of the Rings podcasts. I was talking about political philosophy stuff with John Lorehound on the book Sapiens once. You've been on a bunch of...
Sure, yeah. I was, especially for Severance, it got into a lot of conversations about like personality traits and where's the seat of the soul and the brain and what happens after you die and like...
And you had correct answers for all those things?
I mean, I had answers that I believed to be correct, but,
nice.
You know, that's the best you can do. It's just fun to like be, to have conversations about really cool, in-depth, interesting topics with like-minded people. No matter what.
For sure. Yeah.
So,
and also guesting on other podcasts has been fun. Yeah. So let's get to the feedback.
Okay. I'm ready.
We tried to incorporate all we could. Thanks everybody for sending stuff in. We tried to get representative sample. There are certain ideas that like 4 people were all
plus one-ing,
thumb upping the same idea. And I just chose one sort of in some cases representative. So thanks and keep them coming. This has been awesome. Want to start us off?
Sure. A lot of stuff about covers. Covers we should check out. Covers we should listen to. So from Mike, another great cover is a cover of The Only Living Boy in New York, which is a great Simon and Garfunkel song. It's one of my favorite songs of all time. And Pigpen Theater Company has a really great cover you can find on YouTube. where it's so different from the Simon and Garfunkel song, because obviously that song is just Simon and Garfunkel. But this Pigpen Theater Company is a larger band. They have a bunch of guitars, even an accordion in there, and it just adds like a real rich timbre. Am I saying that right? Rich timbre?
Yeah, a rich texture also, right?
To that song. So check that out.
Cool.
You can find it on YouTube. I don't think we have a clip on it, and that's okay. But thanks to Mike K.
Yeah, keep sending in awesome covers. We may not talk about all of them on the show, but in the Discord, for sure, people will take a listen.
Yeah, like post links for us in the Discord so we can check it out.
All right, our next feedback comes from Dave. Dave played Jesus in Godspell.
Yes.
Back in the 1990 what now?
It must have been 1996?
1996. So back in the 90s, we got a video clip from Dave, who again played Jesus in Godspell. Mm-hmm. Godspell, Stephen Schwartz, right?
Yeah.
Like as in is from it, Wicked, Stephen Schwartz.
Yeah, it's a really great musical about Jesus and Judas, mm-hmm. right? And you may remember listeners, I'm trying to hide my Boston accent, but it comes out thick in this Godspell clip. I had a flute solo in Godspell and I was bragging about it. So this is my friend Dave, my oldest friend, that had a clip on YouTube of me playing this flute solo. And he was kind enough to send it to us. I think objectively, I still sound pretty good. So do we have the clip?
We've got the clip.
Prove me right.
Is the guy singing here Dave or is this somebody else?
No, that is another high school performer.
Yeah. All right.
I won't say his name, but he had a prolific voice. He has a lovely, like very musical theater
his
voice.
His voice is prolific.
Or huh? something. It's very Godspell.
Very Godspell. What the prolific voice?
Because of Jesus?
That means he reproduces a lot? Okay,
here we go.
Nicole's flute solo when she's some sort of a teen or preteen.
Oh, the chorus comes in hot after that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It was beautiful.
It was beautiful. And watching the video, it's a tough watch because, you know, you think when you're doing these high school musical theater productions that they're good. And I stand by that this was a good production. But I watched the whole thing back and I had a couple of notes. One, I look like I'm a literal infant. Like walking around
you
the stage.
You are just
in my
cute as a button, Nicole.
Oh, thanks,
you're
Mark.
So little.
I was teeny.
Like, just like... Were we ever like that? We were. It was so long ago.
That was a freshman in high school. So
wow.
I was like,
yes.
I don't know however old that is, but I was young.
And you're playing in the orchestra, but you're in costume.
Yeah, I was in the band. I was in the play.
Oh, so okay. It's an onstage flute solo, right?
It's on the stage flute solo.
That's why the camera is trained on you during it. And
it's
you're not
really
just randomly,
no.
randomly
and
in the pit.
And then I go back and I do like a little twirl.
Okay, so you were an actor also playing.
I was an
actor.
A real triple threat.
Love it.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much,
Dave,
for sending that, or Jesus, as we to honor his 14-year-old performance.
And you can check that out on YouTube if you just...
Nicole Flute Solo?
No, it's WHS 1996 Godspell.
Wow.
You could probably find that.
Do it. It's the full thing. It's like
it's the full
2 hours
thing.
Or whatever.
It's like a VHS that someone like put, I think Dave probably put on YouTube.
Is this is not the junior version like when we talked about musicals?
No,
it's
I didn't think
thing.
In the 90s they were
and everything.
They were just full out.
Okay.
We didn't really do that yet.
No rules.
No rules.
Tipper Gore did not win her battle against music censorship or
what?
In favor of music censorship. You don't
wanted,
know about that? In the
no.
80s, the like parental
Tipper
advisor.
Gore.
Yeah, Al Gore's wife and then a few other people were the reason why we had like possible bans of, or they were the advocates that
of
was.
Columbine?
No, way before that.
Oh.
No,
sorry,
like obscenity in music, like all the stuff with heavy metal and hip hop being censored in the 80s. A lot of that's Tipper Gore. And she could not censor the Eastern Massachusetts showings of Godspell.
No, never hear about Tipper Gore anymore.
No, I wonder what... Shout out to Tipper Gore. Right in, Tipper.
Thanks for listening. Okay, next comment here from Andy R. I enjoyed listening to your episode about For Me This Is Heaven by Jimmy Eat World.
Yes.
That makes somebody. I loved that song since I first heard it after accidentally purchasing their Fueled by Ramen 5 EP CD in 2002 when I was 14. Sweet times. I'm just going to pause here and say I want to know more about accidentally purchasing. That's a parenthetical in this comment, and I have questions.
Thought they were buying a Bjork album, and right? It turned out it was a Fueled by Ramen comp. Yeah, that's kind of funny, yeah.
Okay. He goes on. I'd like to suggest you give a listen or 40 to, quote, English Garden by the band Great Grandpa. It has certain elements similar to For Me This Is Heaven, which are just beautiful and exquisitely woven, I feel, and I was smitten with it from the first listen in the summer of 2022. Truly one of those songs that made me think and believe this might be the best song ever created. Again, that's English Garden by Great Grandpa. Hope you like it. Listen with your good headphones or monitors. Have a great day. Do you have a clip?
I've got a clip.
Nice. I think this song is like meeting us.
There's a turkey through the window, everybody.
Oh, I was like, what is he just points
big
over
ass
my
Thanksgiving
shoulder?
Turkey walking outside.
That's creepy.
Live podcast recording, everybody. Wow. We're not doing this on the internet.
I'm in the edge of my seat. If
we
only
got
we're at
fauna
YouTube.
Around. I'm sorry. What were you going to say about Great Grandpa?
I think this song meets you and I's musical taste right in the middle because it's giving me like folky singer-songwriter stuff, and it's giving you like intricate musicality,
crazy textures, yeah. Really complicated. A meter change,
a nice simple
meter to compound meter.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's amazing.
It's beautiful.
I just heard that one song. Thanks so much, Andy. I want to check out Great Grandpa. I've never heard that before. When I pulled out that clip, that's so
it's
good.
It's beautiful. Yeah. Like, I'm going to put it on the list. So thank you. That's an awesome recommendation.
Sweet. Next up from John Lorehound. Listen to this week's Nevermind the Music, and it had me laughing hard. Which week's? Oh, right after the Miley Cyrus episode, I think.
Oh, sure. Party in the
on
USA.
On Nicole's nice versus kind distinction, remember where you said Californians are
nice but not kind.
Yeah, and Bostonians are the
kind,
opposite.
Kind but not nice. Yeah.
He says, I'm from New York, and that's what most people I know say about New York City versus other reasons. When I lived in the South for 3 years, I kind of felt this way too.
Mm-hmm.
That said, I wonder if it's just that we feel more comfortable with the mannerisms and communication styles at home, and that makes it feel more genuine to us. Great episode, Nicole and Mark. Thanks. I had to leave in that scratching of our backs. What do you think? Is it just because you know the way that Bostonians communicate, and so it feels real, whereas us Californians feel artificial to you because you just don't
maybe
get the vibe?
I mean, it might be. I definitely enjoy the West Coast, but I don't feel at home there. Like, I don't feel comfortable there.
Yeah,
it's so silly because it's a very comfortable place. Like, the weather's great and it's so colorful and bright and like people seem nice, but something about the grit of the East Coast appeals to me more. And maybe that is because it's home to me and feels more comforting to me. But you're like, you've lived in each coast, right?
So yeah, I think, and I've now lived, as of this year, I've lived in Boston area basically exactly as long as I lived in LA.
Mm-hmm.
Not as long as I lived in California. I lived in California for my whole life up until I moved here. But LA versus Boston's been about exactly the same time. Because I didn't share necessarily in that distinction. Mm-hmm. I can see what you're coming from, but it doesn't feel completely true. Because I feel like there's that everywhere. Like, John mentions the South. I never lived in the South, but I know some Southerners, and apparently Bless Your Heart
is
like
heart.
The best example of a really nice but vicious cut.
Yeah,
like if you
sure.
say bless your heart, it's like saying fuck you to someone.
It's like, oh, honey.
But it's very nice, mm-hmm. sort of, right? And so I think every region has their version of that.
Mm-hmm.
I think your example was like, someone would say, if you were struggling in California, they'd say something really nice and then walk away without
sure.
helping you, right? And maybe that's true here too, just in different ways. But
maybe.
I don't know. Good point, John.
You're kind, but not nice.
I think that's very accurate, and that bums me out because
I love it about myself.
What?
I love being kind but not nice. I'll be kind all day, but I'll still tell you you're an asshole.
Like, I think I've said this already. Like, I have like thick eyebrows, and and I furrow my brow. I just have a look that, you know, and I'm a cis white guy of a certain age, and I just have, I think people, and I talk loud and fast, people can assume that I'm kind of abrasive even when I'm not trying to be. I talk loud, and and so I might be trying to help you get off the street when you've fallen and you think I'm attacking you or something. Right. I do have that kind of first impression sometimes that I'm not
nice. A little bit. Me too.
Yeah. And it sucks. But know. You know, but it's better than the opposite. It's better than seeming nice but being a dick.
Welcome to womanhood, Mark.
Yeah. Welcome to woman. I've been training for this my whole life, apparently.
You're finally here.
Have people, anytime I raise my voice, they think you're mad at them. Yeah. Yikes. Mm-hmm. That's what it's like, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. You tell me,
shit.
I guess. All right.
Thanks, John.
Okay. Another comment from Matt Kelly of the Geekscape Network, host of One Hit Thunder, which is a great podcast. I know Mark has been on. I think I have an episode coming out on that soon. And also the Weird Algorithm podcast.
And like 50 other podcasts.
And like
there's
so
a horror
many.
Movie podcast. Yeah, good stuff.
Matt's just crushing it over there. He's referencing our Another Bad Creation. We referenced Another Bad Creation in the Everybody Talks episode. And he's saying, did you
Aisha.
Know? Aisha. Oh, Aisha.
Yeah.
You know what's funny? Is
because a two-hit wonder. That's why we talked about it. Two-hit wonder. Yeah.
And I asked Matt, he's like, oh, come on the One Hit Thunder and like talk about a song. And I was like, can I talk about Aisha? And he's told me no, because it's a two-hit wonder.
Not a one-hit wonder, yeah.
And I was like, okay. Like,
oh, man.
I mean, there's so many rules.
Anyways.
Anyway, I appreciate it. He said that Chris Cross's Jump is a diss track to Another Bad Creation.
Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
You remember the song, right?
Jump? Yeah, jump around.
No, that's Jump Around by House of Pain.
Oh.
Chris Cross will make a jump.
Oh, and this everybody,
is, let's listen to the hook and let's listen to the lines in question.
Oh my gosh.
Don't compare us to another bad little fad, right? I love it that... I mean, this is how many years before Kendrick v. Drake? And this is two preteen rap groups having beef.
Right.
There can only be space for one pop rap group.
Only be space for one.
Yeah.
Right.
It's wild.
Another feud in the history of rap feuds, right?
Right. Top five rap feud, yeah, right there.
Bad Baby and Travis Barker's kid.
I don't know anything. Travis Barker's kid?
Dude. Don't.
Is this another beef that one of us knows all about and the whole pop culture knows about and then the other doesn't?
Yes.
We look stupid when this episode finally comes out? Cool. I'll gladly be stupid. I didn't know Travis Barker had a kid.
Well, I think that what you really should Google if you do anything is Google Bad Baby.
All right.
It's spelled B-H-A-D-B-H-A-D-I-Y-Baby.
That's how you spell those words. That
makes
sense.
You know the Cash Me Outside girl from Dr. Phil?
Okay, I gotta Google a few things.
Oh, yes. Make sure you Google it.
Live podcasting. All right.
But keep your safe search on when
you
Google
boy,
that.
Oh, boy. All right. Right.
Okay,
do it private browsing?
Okay. If you know, you know, guys.
Okay, I don't know. I'll leave it at that. All right.
Okay, cool.
From Alleyoop 19. Did you know there's a second lost album theory in addition to the Karma album? This is about T-Swift, everybody.
Okay.
Right?
Uh-huh.
So... Nicole had talked about that after, I think, 1989, instead of the sort of angry F you all reputation we got, there was going to be an album called Karma, right? So in 2020, this is back to Ellie. So in 2020, I think after Evermore was released, there was a leaked album art that said Woodvale. There is speculation that there was a third sister album of Folklore and Evermore that never got released with more songs like those eras. I believe that Taylor's team... came out at one point and said that Woodvale was the codename for Folklore. But there's definitely speculation that there's a third album out there.
Yes. And she was on, Taylor was on interviews and like, I think with Jimmy Fallon or something. And he called her out because, and she showed her the album art that was like the Folklore album cover. But instead of the words Folklore, it said Woodvale on it. And she like completely brushed off. She's like, oh no, it's so silly. We forgot to change it. And like the promotional stuff came out with the wrong title. But also when Target set the shelves up for Folklore, they had like the little tags on the shelves that had like the codes, you know, and like how much it costs, like the, you know, the tags. And it said Woodvale, not Folklore, too. So that's another.
What if it's just a mistake?
I think it's just a mistake. I'm a big fan of like clowning on Taylor Swift theories. I think it was just a code, so the title wasn't released. But like the besides what Alley-Oop 19 is saying, also it's the Target piece too. That like there were, there's definitely was signage like with UPC codes that said Woodvale on them.
So I love the idea though that it's just a mistake, like a big transpositional error.
But like Taylor Swift doesn't make mistakes like that.
Yeah, that's possible.
Like
yeah.
That's not what she's doing. Yeah. She's so mad. She's so dialed in towards stuff like that. Especially in that moment. I don't know.
So I don't have a lot to say about this. I think this is fascinating.
It's like really interesting.
Can I say what this makes me think of? And this is, I don't know if I've ever told anybody this in the last 30 years because it's so stupid.
It's
nobody
just
wants
me and you here. So.
Everybody fast forward 2 minutes. This is stupid. This is a little error like that, though, could send, you know, if this starts conspiracy theories, can I tell you the like 1991 version of that?
Sure.
When I'm under 10 or whatever, Super Mario Brothers 3 comes out on the Nintendo, the NES, everybody. An excellent game. Have you played Super Mario Brothers 3?
I played it, but it's not my favorite type of game.
So there's it's not your favorite type of game, meaning video game.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. So awesome game, though. Awesome platformer, which Nicole's not into. Do you remember something called Nintendo Power?
Yes.
There was a Nintendo Power magazine edition that was all it was like the secrets of that game, right? Uh-huh. So that whole month's, or maybe it was a separate strategy guide that had maps of every level, which you really don't need in that
because
kind of game.
Because that's how you had to do it. Yeah. Like you had to like call into phone lines.
Or
you
trial and error and stuff. Like, yeah.
There was no internet,
right?
No.
So every section, every level would have a list of the items that would be found in the level, right? And one of them was, it would show like a suit. You know how Mario, there'd be a fire flower. There'd be a suit that turns you into a raccoon. There'd be later games, you'd have Yoshi and all that, right? So it would list, it would show a raccoon leaf. It would show all the different suits. And one of the freaking things it showed on this one level, I think it's World 4, maybe World 5.
It's important to
know. Was a suit that was Wendy O'Koopa, one of the bosses. Wendy O'Koopa is Bowser's daughter,
girlfriend,
niece, I don't know.
Whatever, adjacent.
A boss. It was a little, it showed that as if it was a suit you could get. You could turn into Wendy O'Koopa. And this is like, gotta be a misprint. But fucking kids, because,
so mad.
You know, this is my brother and I trying to figure this out. Our friends trying to figure this out. One of my friends, if you could call him that, swore he got the suit once.
He's lying.
And he's a liar. But
what's
this
his
stupid
name? What was his name? Say it.
Jeremy. How dare you, Jeremy?
How dare you, Jeremy?
I think it was Jeremy.
For clout? Were you lying
Jeremy.
For clout?
Noted liar Jeremy, who is now
he's like a lawyer.
A journalist. No, he's a journalist in the Midwest.
It's too good.
Doing the people's work. He's a liar.
Yeah.
Shout out to Jeremy. Come on the show. Defend yourself.
Yeah. Right in.
Me and my brother looked for this thing for a year and it didn't exist. It was a misprint. It has to be a misprint because when I Google it, there's no thing. This is years. I did Google it back in the internet. Or
other
now
people
in the internet
that
age.
Are listening. I don't know if Jeremy's listening. I think after this,
no, Jeremy,
there was a big falling out, right?
Yeah, no, like, I never talked
never
to him.
Never spoke to him
No,
again.
He was my best friend until like middle school. Yeah.
Oh, buddy.
And he was a liar.
But I bet you there are other people listening right now that know are like screaming at their
because they
radio,
remember the Wendy O'Koopa suit. I need a screenshot of the Nintendo Power like world map or item list for World 4 or 5.
I want to see Mario
3.
In the suit. I want to see it on his little.
In modern day, if he said it, I'd be like, give me a screenshot, Jeremy. Where's the screenshot? But back then, I just had to believe him, which I did, unfortunately.
Well, it seems like
and
that's
it burned
on you,
me.
Bud.
Moving on. That's what you wanted, Alley-Oop, when you sent in your Taylor feedback.
That's really...
You wanted me to talk about Super Mario. I'm on the East Coast, so I have to say Super Mario now.
There's a lot of intersectionality in the Venn diagram of Taylor Swift fans and Super Mario Brothers 3 fans. I think there's
maybe
a
Super
spot.
Mario World or Mario 64 fans, because Mario 3 is a little... Taylor was only 2 or 3 when that came out. Anyways, go ahead.
Well,
what do you got?
Interesting. Okay, so this is from Nancy, 2 Kids, 2 Dogs. My husband is an audiophile with super expensive equipment. I joke that he used a protractor to line up speakers to the sofa to find the perfect listening spot. We have music nights where we listen to entire vinyl albums and devour the liner notes. This is the only way to truly appreciate music. sounds kind of like you, Mark. Do you like protract your speakers to find like the perfect spot? Like, what's your perfect listening environment?
Thanks for the question, Nancy. Nancy, by the way, famous Lorehound. She does all the compiles all the insane amounts
she's
of
like
feedback
in
for
the inner
their,
circle.
Yeah, she's in the. The,
I wonder how
the,
you fit
the
in,
White
Nancy.
Tower Council or whatever the White Council. That's the Lord of the Rings. Oh, all the wizards. Okay,
so mysterious.
There's really two different answers for me. So you are in a room where we're recording this podcast, but I also use this room when I'm doing mixing.
Sure.
I'm mixing an album or a song or something. And I do very much try to have my studio monitors, the speakers, in a very specific spot and make sure my gobos, my these like walls that dampen sound are in a very specific spot. I've got acoustic treatment on the walls, on the ceiling. I got bass traps, corner traps. I've done this, but I'll put on random Apple earbuds when I'm listening to a song, when I'm on a run or whatever. When I'm doing professional work, I'm stupid about audio. And the Lorehounds know this when I'm like, oh, my mic needs to be turned up in the mix when I'm like, I'm stupid when it's something that I take seriously. But when it's like just for fun, I let the gas off, sort of, right? I don't like listening on laptop speakers or an iPhone speaker, but I'm not an audiophile in the sense where when I'm consuming music, I need to be on a hi-fi system made in 1978 that still sounds beautiful to this day.
Yeah.
What about you?
I like listening to records. I think that there's something about the tone of music from a record that I enjoy. But my ideal, I like listening to music on noise-canceling headphones, like big old chunky headphones, like my Boss soundproof headphones, for sure. And then I also really like listening to music in my car. Just because it's like, I don't know, I just like it's my own little bubble. But I like headphones more, I think. For me, listening to music is a more private thing. For some reason.
You talked on another podcast about it's like too much. It can be overwhelming though, headphones.
Sometimes,
when there's a lot of
depending
like, stuff
on like
going
the
on.
Mix. Like I don't like if a lot of production now will like exploit headphones and say like make sure you listen to this with headphones because I'm gonna it's like the noise travels from one ear to the other. There's a word for that that I know by the way that you're looking at me that you know what that word is, but I don't. I don't really like that. It makes me feel like unbalanced, but I just like the immersiveness sometimes. And then I'm thinking of, you remember the Flaming Lips album, Zurika? Do you know that?
I don't know in their album. So, we talk about seeing them live in another episode that we can come back to. But
Zurika was an album that was on four CDs, and you'd have to have four CD players on like four corners of a room, and you'd sit in the middle, and you'd have four people press play in the CDs at the same time, and they would sync up to be the intended music. And that was...
Wow.
The listening experience that they manufactured in this album. So you could listen to Zurika 1 and it doesn't make sense. You need to listen to all four of them together and you need to hit play at the same time. It was just kind of cool. And when I read that comment, I like thought of Zurika.
Wow.
And trying to get all my stoner friends to hit the button at the same time and took like 2 hours.
That's its own adventure.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. So thanks for the comment, Nancy.
Cool.
Two kids, two dogs.
Coverage varies by plan. View contracts and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
If you're driving a car or truck with an expired warranty and suddenly lost your transmission or needed a full engine repair, would a $4,000 repair bill leave you stranded? I'm Danica Patrick. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Choose the company I trust. Endurance. No matter the mileage, if your vehicle is less than 20 years old, Endurance offers comprehensive auto protection plans for any budget. Protection on the drivetrain, electrical, transmission, AC, and more. Plus, benefits like 24/7 roadside assistance and rental car reimbursement on any plan. Endurance handles everything from making the claim through the repair process to paying the certified mechanic of your choice. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Act now and get one full year of elite benefits, a $2,000 value, free.
Visit endurancewarranty.com for your fast free quote today. That's endurancewarranty.com.
All right, from Anita B. I stumbled upon the show when I was trying to find a non-politics news podcast, non-politics, non-news podcast, rather.
Nice.
To round out my podcast listening. And I'm really enjoying it so far. Thanks, Anita. It takes me down memory lane to hear some of the music you talk about, but I've also learned about new songs outside of my musical interest, like Great Grandpa's song, English Garden,
that's
that we
great.
Just listened to. Yeah. My one request would be for a more back to basics episode on the music theory, understanding that I'm probably not using that correctly. I appreciate parts of the episode that break down why a song is good or interesting, but I get lost with all the major, minor notes, etc., because I don't have any background for it. Well, Anita, guess what Nicole and I just did? We just recorded an episode of me talking through a bunch of terminology, not just me. Nicole's in there too. ChatGPT's in there too.
We have lots of insight. It was actually really fun to go back to the basics, and thanks so much for the recommendation to do that. I think we both get lost in jargon quite a bit, and it's a really nice reminder to say, like, hey, can we back up? Can we go back to like the 101 information? So I'm excited to we'll put those on the next couple of weeks. Right?
Yeah, they're going to be bonus episodes. We'll put them off schedule. There should be three little ones. I don't know if they're all going to come out on the same day or weekly, but look for them. And if you already know all the music you need to know, don't feel like it's required listening, but they're fun.
They're fun and funny. I'd check it out because if anything, for me, it made me feel really smart to know that I've actually been learning something throughout this whole process.
Nice.
Like, oh, it's sticking. So maybe you have been too. So thanks again, Anita. That was really helpful
good idea.
Feedback.
And it's helpful because I, as much as I do teach beginners and I consider myself a pretty good teacher, it can still be hard to remember what I can assume other people
right.
know, because even though I did learn music, I also know that my parents said I was bouncing around in the back seat of the car seat when I was like 1 or 2 years old, right? And so there's certain things that I maybe didn't learn at a time that I remember learning it.
Right.
So when it comes time to teach my students how to keep the beat, I actually, not to brag, I don't remember learning that. I just sort of, that's something I could do. I learned how to do a lot of other stuff, but it's nice to remember that, like, yeah, I can't just say a word and assume you all know what I mean.
Yeah. My favorite thing about teaching is it keeps me learning, and it's not enough to just learn it. You have to learn it in a way that you can explain it to someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's what a lot of teachers maybe can be better at. Is that it's one thing to know content, but it's another thing to know how to explain that content to someone else so they understand it. So the episodes that we're putting out in reference to Anita's comments really helped us reinforce that. Like, okay, do we know what a beat is? But how do you explain that to somebody?
What's it mean? Yeah.
It was really cool to do. It was a fun process. Awesome.
Sweet.
Thanks. We'll move on. From Marilyn Lorehound. A thought occurred to me this morning. Might you at some point consider comparing several of the Star Trek opening music scores? I've completely fallen in love with Voyager's opening, though the series original music still has a place in my heart.
The original series music.
The original series music.
60s Star Trek,
I even as I think the Next Generation's music is better. Then there's Deep Space Nine, and I'm sure other people will come up with others to add to the list as if you need more. Given that the music encompasses both large and small screen shows encompassing many decades and many different stories within the universe, it seems to me there'd be a lot there for both Mark and Nicole to talk about. What are your thoughts? Mark, what's your familiarity with the Star Trek universe and Star Trek history and like the music of Star Trek?
Good question. Just in the general question, also, like, are we going to do a Star Trek episode? I don't know. Probably not, but maybe. Let's see
probably
if the spirit moves us. I want to talk about it for a few minutes now.
Yeah,
but
I'm a very, very, very prolific Next Generation fan.
Yes.
And that's the only Star Trek I've really toed into. But I love the Next Generation. I've rewatched the whole series, like, multiple times.
So I am of an age where not to be too stereotypical of a suburban family in the late 80s or whatever. But my dad was watching Star Trek, The Next Generation.
Yeah.
And so I saw it with him. So
mine too.
That and the movies. I think actually the first movie I remember being like out at night seeing. When did Star Trek 4, the one where they go to San Francisco,
with
come out?
With the whales?
The whales one.
Yeah.
I was little. I think I was way too little to understand any of that movie.
Did you watch it again as an adult?
Oh, I've seen it a few times.
Yeah.
It's great. It's hilarious.
Different.
I mean, it's ridiculous, but it's great. The nuclear vessels and all that, it's perfect. but good Lorehound Star Trek movie coverage, by the way.
Yeah.
Check it out. Some controversial opinions about Star Trek 5, though, I will say that.
Oh.
So, okay. I think I was like way too young to be there, and I remember coming out of the movie and it being dark out, and that like kind of blowing my mind as a little kid, because I would go to see a movie and it would be Honey, I Shrunk the Kids or whatever, and I'd see it at 1 p.m. or whatever for cheap matinee. So I've gone back, and so I love the movies. I've seen all the movies, maybe, I think probably all the movies, mm-hmm. even the new ones. I went back and watched sort of, I found a list. I'd shout out who made it, but it was a blog post several years ago of like the essential Star Trek original series and the Next Generation episodes.
Oh, sure.
So I watched all of those and then also watched some other episodes, and it's striking how bad some of those shows are. Like some of the original series and even Next Generation episodes are so bad, but some of it's so cool. I loved some of it.
Do you remember what some of the Next Generation episodes were?
The most vivid memory I have from a kid is this one where there's these little like bugs, like mealworm kind of bugs that are like infesting and taking over people's
Oh, and it's
thing.
Like a dream sequence kind
I don't
of,
know
and
that
they like
dream
use
sequence.
A scanner.
But I've seen that episode again as an adult, but it
and like
it,
Data
it was
has
burned.
Dreams and Sigmund Freud's in it, and he talks about like
I remember a lot of Data being Sherlock Holmes and
yes,
stuff in the,
yep.
in the simulator thing. What is that? So. I've never been a holodeck. Thank you. I've never been a serious Trek fan, but I've always liked it. I did not watch Deep Space Nine because my dad wasn't into it. He didn't like that they weren't exploring. I haven't seen Voyager, haven't seen Enterprise, though my dad loves Enterprise, which is wild since everybody hates Enterprise.
Well, what? Oh, I think Picard is the one that I want to watch.
Picard is the new one. No, Enterprise is like early 2000s.
Did you watch the Lorehearns are going to kill me because I can't think of the name of it. But like a guy from Family Guy, and he did like, it was like a spoof, not a spoof of Next Generation, but it was like a similar and newer like comedy.
I don't know.
Oh my gosh. If only there was a machine.
You're not talking about Galaxy Quest though.
No, not Galaxy Quest.
Because that was earlier and that's funny.
What is it called, guys? If only there was a machine that could tell us
everything.
It's a TV
show.
It's a TV
show. I know what you're talking about. I haven't seen it yet, but
no,
I haven't
seen
it.
It's really good. It has like Next Generation vibes to it, but it's like funnier. But it has the same kind of tone.
So I like Star Trek. I so far behind on all the series is. I've seen greatest hits of the first two series, and that's basically it.
Ugh.
And then the movies. In terms of the music.
Yes.
I happen to be partial to the Jerry Goldsmith composing stuff. So like the bum, ba ba bum, ba ba bum, the Next Generation theme.
Next Generation,
I love it.
So good.
He did some of the movies. Jerry Goldsmith died, I think, like he was a guest lecturer where I went to get my master's degree.
Wow.
And he died like right before I started there, which is pretty selfish.
Yeah, right.
Of him, because I was going to get to, you know, take a film music class where he would guest sometimes. He probably died a couple years before I got there. But
that Next Generation music for me is iconic, and it like
love it.
It comforts me so much. I used to watch that show with my dad, and right after when my dad passed away a couple years ago, and I like rewatched Next Generation like in his homage as part of my grieving process.
Oh yeah, I believe
a lot
it.
Of intention
I bet
there.
I,
when you say like, oh, I picked like the best episodes, like they're all great.
Oh,
there's
even
no
the
bad
ones are great, right?
Even the bad ones are so good.
So I did listen to the Voyager theme. It's cool. I don't have an emotional connection to it. I don't want to get into a real episode. We would get into what they have in common musically.
Yeah.
Da, 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 all that. I think it deserves that. Right now, I did not spend the time analyzing it all to say
I
that.
I like the idea of it.
If we come back to it another time, that
maybe
would
we could
be fun.
Do even like a sidetrack of my top five Star Trek Next Generation episodes. It's nothing to do with music and psychology, but
put a pin
if
in it,
you'll
maybe.
Indulge me.
I will say the weird one is the Enterprise theme. Back when I was on a Lorehounds podcast talking about the Oscars with Alicia.
Yeah.
We were talking about Diane Warren.
Yes.
Who we do talk about in this show, too. I'm trying to remember which episode. Maybe it's the Ace of Base episode. Don't Turn Around. Did she write that? I don't remember. Okay.
All right.
Anyways, Diane Warren wrote the theme to Star Trek Enterprise.
Oh.
Star Trek Enterprise is like soft rock kind of power ballad pop song. It's not a symphonic thing. Listen to it, people. Unless I'm crazy, I looked up the main theme. I listened to the main theme of the first like four or five series.
Mm.
I guess that would be the first five series. And one of these things is not like the other.
How interesting.
A Diane Warren pop song.
I will see my dream come alive at last. I will touch the sky, and they're not gonna hold me down no more. No, they're not gonna change my mind, 'cause I've got faith of the heart. Go where my heart will take me.
Marilyn's got some more feedback. Do you wanna keep going, Nicole?
She says at some point it'd be lovely if you and I could do an episode on the behavior of fans. What is it that made all those teenage girls shriek and faint and toss their underwear on stage when the Beatles first came to the States. Or maybe it was some other band they were tossing it to later on. I can't quite recall.
It feels like more Led Zeppelin, probably.
Yeah. But plenty of both musical composition, psychological stuff there. And I agree. I think that like fandom and that group think and that like hysteria, classic female hysteria around
fandom.
Yeah,
very gendered term, yeah.
Yeah, it's like the most one. That's a really great comment, Marilyn. I hope maybe we can do some comments on that. For me, that's a full episode. Or at least I get 20, 30 minutes on that.
Yeah, so. Maybe. So either sidetrack or... Maybe we'll find a good musical artist that the fandom is a bit... We talked about it a little bit, you know, teenagers with Paramore and things like that, especially as it related to the lyrics of the songs there. But I think that might be worth a deep dive at some point.
Yeah, I do too.
Fandom and hysteria.
I love it. So other similar thoughts from Ghost of Partition after listening to the Supply Closet episode with Mark. So this was...
Yeah, Severance.
A Severance Lorehound podcast. I was reminded of how horror movies... And the only thing that scares me about them is the music and the sound of what's going on.
So this is related, of course, to the... I kind of put these out of order. This about the Star Trek film music thing, right? Mm. Go on. We got a couple that are similar. And I guess you're reading the whole page, Nicole.
I'll read the whole page. This one's from Max R. I was mainly curious on if the future movie soundtracks or even classical music would be something that would be in the cards for our podcast. Being perfectly honest, I ended up listening to Across the Stars by John Williams and his other love themes, Marion's theme from Raiders of the Lost Ark and Leia's theme and Han and Leia. They all have very similar notes. So from a music standpoint, what makes those notes so attractive as love themes and ballads? And then from a psychological standpoint, why do we feel the way we feel when we listen to them? There might also be something similar to the love theme in William and Elizabeth and Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End. So that's interesting, too. Like, why do certain horror movies make us, the musicality of those horror movies make us feel some certain way? Why do love ballads, like the harmonies and I don't know, your words of those songs make us feel a certain way? I have thoughts on that, but I'm going to keep going because we have more feedback about this. This next one's from Chris M. I know you've done a Paramore episode, but there's something about Ain't It Fun. I don't know what it is, but I could listen to that song repeat constantly, which is weird. There's something that triggers nostalgia, happiness, and sadness. For context, I was born in 82, same, and I have two daughters now. Not sure what's going on there musically or in my brain.
I put all these together because they're all about the like pulling emotion out of us with musical devices.
Right.
What do you think?
I think that like there's a lot of nostalgia attached. Like in this last comment about Paramore, like there is nostalgia about bringing you back to like the time and place of listening to that song, especially in like a real like escapist way, like bringing you back to simpler times. But I think that when you talk about love themes and horror themes, like they do sound similar. And I think that over time we just be, it's like what came first, the chicken or the egg? Like, do we think of them as romantic themes because of the way that the song sounds? Or have we heard just so many songs attached to romantic images that now we like, whenever we hear the song, we're primed to think of something romantic?
A chord used in a horror score might be objectively tense that stresses you out, but it might also stress you out because it was used in Psycho by the score by Bernard Herrmann in the 1950s, and so you now associate that with it, right?
And like we know things about, like, you know, not to like just lightly talk about generational trauma, but we know that trauma can be passed down intergenerationally. So I'm wondering if even like our predisposition to think of songs as traumatic or songs as full of love is something that's like kind of now ingrained in us biologically somehow.
I think it's
that's interesting.
I don't know, but the cultural pull of that would be so strong. It would be so hard to quantify whatever genetic stuff, because it's just we're surrounded by, like, you'd need to do a twin study with someone raised in the woods that doesn't get, we're just so enculturated and socialized.
I wonder, like, in different, you know, where we live in America, right? And our culture is our culture. I wonder if in very different cultures, if there's the same attachment to, like, romantic songs sounding romantic. Or maybe there's a culture that likes horror music songs, according to our ears, is a love song to somebody else.
Yeah, I think there's less diversity in that cultural aspect that there will be in a lot of cultural aspects. Like, wearing white at a funeral might make sense in some cultures and doesn't in American culture in a lot of ways. Those are polar opposite concepts. I think there's more homogeneity because of the exporting of American film.
Yeah.
So while there's Bollywood and stuff, there are other film hubs. And obviously the folks living on Sentinel Island that have no contact with us will have very different understandings of music. But American film and thus American popular song and American soundtracks and stuff, that stuff is more well known in other countries than those other countries' films are well known here.
Yeah.
Right. So even if a culture might not have the same, and also Western music notation has proliferated even in like our chords and stuff like that. You could, again, Bollywood music, you might hear the pop song that's the main title song or whatever in a Bollywood film or big dance number that has a melody that includes a lot of traditional Indian aspects, microtonality, certain kinds of embellishments, but the backing chords are still like, you know, Western American style synth pop or something like that.
Our cultural reach is too expansive to
you can't separate it anymore. Right. So, you know, in terms of these things in general, I'm not going to answer what makes all the John Williams love themes similar musically, because that would take a full episode. Like, you could deep dive on a song and get to the bottom of it and track those. And we do that sometimes. I don't know that I will on film. Look, are we going to talk about classical music and film music in full episodes on this show? Mm-hmm. As opposed to, you know, we could do a let's do favorite, you know, bad guy background music in films as a sidetrack, right?
Soundtracks.
Yeah, we can do that. We can do that. I could talk about scores on sidetracks. The reason why I think we're going to stay mostly pop music focused in our full episodes is very simple. It's the level of complexity of the music, which is to say, I can analyze a film score. I can analyze a piece of classical music. I have done so professionally. I have written academic papers on stuff. However, that takes a heck of a lot of time.
Yeah.
And also, usually, and here's the main thing, usually I do so with the aid of a musical score.
Yeah.
Figuring out what every single chord and every single violin is doing in an orchestral piece by ear, I'm trained to do that, but it's kind of a lot for a 40-minute podcast, right? Whereas I can do that in a pop song. I can listen to it and figure out what the chords are pretty easily. A film score, I don't usually have access to the written notation, because it's under copyright in a way that I would have to buy the rental of it, or I would have to know someone who was in the orchestra that conducted it and look at their violin part in a way that it's just for me to do what I'm trained to do for an academic paper, for a podcast episode. I don't know that it's worth it. Now, if I have a score on hand, we could talk about it, but it's just sort of different. And I think maybe I'm just copying out and it's just, let's just do pop songs. It's just the model of it, I can deep dive about something simpler in an accessible way.
Yeah.
Whereas if I deep dive on something complex,
we'll never see you again. You'll go into a rabbit hole.
And a lot of you won't want to listen to it. I can do what I did when I was in grad school or when I'm at a conference presenting a paper, and I just don't think y'all want to listen to it. Mm. Like when I proposed, I've mentioned before that this podcast was something I always wanted to do, but it also started as an opportunity because I had a sabbatical. Yeah. I am a professor at a college and I worked there long enough that I got a semester off. All I needed was some kind of a creative or academic project. And my project was this podcast, but this podcast started out more academic.
Mm.
And then when I decided, you know what, I really should have a non-musician on this podcast with me, I was talking to Nicole and that all disappeared.
Yeah.
It was way more fun if A, we brought in psychology, and B, if this was something for everybody. This was not something for musicians or not something for my students, but something for everybody. And so, and this is not about people don't listen to classical music as much as pop. It's not that. It's that for me to do what I do, in quotes, on classical music, I'm then talking to a class, and I don't really want to be talking to a class.
Moving on. Thanks, Mark.
I'm going to read the next question. This is a quick one, though.
Okay.
From Davey Mack. Thanks, Davey. And thank you to all the feedback that Nicole just read to those folks.
Awesome.
Davey says, I just found out the Grammys do video game soundtracks now. That's cool. Though none of the soundtracks I listened to last year were nominated. So my question for you is there, because I didn't know that either, and that's cool.
Yeah.
Do you play video games? We talked about Mario. And are there any video game music that has stuck with you?
I like video games, blanket statement. I play the Zelda games.
Yeah.
But what I'm really interested in lately, and I've been waiting I've been sitting on this information to share with you because I know that you're going to love it. I recently had the opportunity to see Max Richter play.
Oh, yeah.
And
he's really good composer.
He's very good at composing. And the whole time I was like, Mark would love this. Mark would love this. And I was like, maybe he's here right now, but I don't. You probably weren't. But
so what was the concert, though?
It was at a theater in Boston. It was two of his albums.
Yeah.
Like the Blue Notebooks.
Okay.
And then his most recent album, which was like very atmospheric. And then as I'm listening to it, I was with my buddy. He had a ticket. He's like, come with me to this. You'll like it. And I loved it. And I was like, halfway through, I was like, this sounds like video game music. And he was like, yeah, no, like this guy like does video game music. He does movie music. He does everything. He's like,
so
very
I think
good.
Part of that also is, so Max Richter, you all have heard my pop songs or whatever, but I'm also a trained, like, so to speak, classical composer. Like that's what my degree is in. Orchestra music and choir and all that. I would describe, this is an oversimplification, but Max Richter, at least some of his music, is what you could describe as post-minimalist. That's also, if I had to say what my music is like, my kind of classical whatever music, it's kind of like that too. And the reason I mention that is because it involves a lot of repetition and loops and pulsing things. And there's something that is cyclical like you would find in video game music, even when he's not writing a video game score. That makes sense for Max Richter.
So I like it, that like atmospheric nature of video game. And like some video game music is like very iconic. And even like the sound effects in music is very in video games are very iconic. Sure. I do play Zelda a lot. It is limited very much to the Nintendo Zelda and the Super NES Zelda. And now I'm in this like weird Game Boy Advanced Zelda game.
Minish Cap?
The Minish Cap.
Minish Cap? The backstory as to how Link gets the hat, everybody.
I can't start playing this Minish Cap.
I'm playing Echoes of Wisdom with my oldest right now.
Is it good? Yeah. Do you like
it? It's good. It's more like the old school ones, except
well, that's what I want
to
check
Zelda.
Out. I know. I want to check it out. So that's the next.
Not
I just have to get
just
through
Link.
The Minish Cap.
Link's only in it as like an antagonistic, weird demon version of himself. Anyways. I'm only halfway through. So video game music for me, I still play video games, not as much as I used to / would like to. It's a lot like film music now, although the element you say atmospheric, the deal now is something sometimes called adaptive soundtrack, right?
Okay.
So it's like one, did you play Super Mario World on Super Nintendo? Not your kind of game.
No.
When you jumped on, there'd be music in the level, when you jump on Yoshi's back, bongo drums come in.
Yeah.
So what adaptive scoring is where the soundtrack will change based on the situation.
I love that.
So you might have music for a level, but then when you enter a battle, something gets more intense, a layer.
Mm.
So that's a very cool thing about modern games. But I have to be honest, like for me, it's formative. Some of the old school 80s and 90s music. And I'll point to two things. Mega Man.
Okay.
The music in the game Mega Man, the NES series Mega Man by Capcom, like Mega Man 2 in particular, Bubble Man's level music is like... legitimate banger. Airman, legitimate. And they got this out of chiptunes. They got this out of very simple synthesizer. There's something about you have so few resources, you could only do like three sounds at once, that you have to think of other ways to make it interesting.
Mm.
And boy, do they. And then the other thing I'll point to is Final Fantasy. Final Fantasy. So Nobuo Uematsu was, at least in that era, the composer. Final Fantasy VI, or Final Fantasy III, they call it. I played it actually after it came out. I didn't have a Super Nintendo. I played it when I was in college.
Yeah.
And it was like one of those almost moments where I wanted to become a composer because
it's
of how emotionally
crazy
effective it was.
That you just like have that guy's name in your head. Like you're not reading notes about this composer. Yeah. You just like know who that composer is.
Well,
it's wild.
But I don't know the Mega Man. And I think the Mega Man stuff was almost maybe a team of people uncredited back then. But Mark here, of course, from the future. Mega Man 2 in particular was not composed necessarily by a team. There were a few composers who were involved, but Takashi Tateishi would be the main composer for that game. Yeah, well, that's because it had a big effect on me. It really did. Awesome. So, Davey, thank you.
So from Ghost of Partition, I'm eagerly waiting for some Yi coverage. He's recently come out with more statements, comments about his mental health. So I'm sure it'd be a hell of a conversation.
Are we talking about Kanye?
The thing about Kanye is I think that he has mental illness. And I think that he also is very eager to stay in headlines. And I think that he says things sometimes to get clicks. And it's really, really problematic. I'd like to talk about Kanye, but I want to do it more mindfully than what could happen right now. And I want to see if that's something we want to give space to.
I don't know if I do or not.
That's fair.
Listeners, later on the season, you're going to hear an episode where we talk about problematic artists as a deep dive. And I think Kanye is interesting because is some of the controversial stuff he's doing him trying to be inflammatory, or is it mental illness, or is it both? And how to decide that makes it hard to decide whether I want to talk about
and
it.
I don't know if I want to like give bandwidth to some of the stuff he's been saying recently, which honestly may have happened after Mr. Partition's
comments. We're
going
to think about it, Ghost. We're going to think about it. Yeah. Maybe. I think we both want to, but we both don't want to.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Okay, so.
All right. So I've got two related posts, and this is like a discussion that was happening that I don't even know how much we need to say about it. I just wanted to highlight these opinions because it follows up on some of the conversations we've had in previous episodes.
Great.
And I wanted to share some insightful thoughts from listeners. So David Lorehound says, and I don't even remember what we were talking about that spawned this. He says, here's my tinfoil hat theory on the rise of the solo artist versus band representation for top awards. This is the Grammy episode. The rise of music streaming over the album. Yeah, it's all about making hit singles to capture the market, be used for TikTok videos, etc. I'm not a music person, but it seems to me the culture of the album is not what it used to be. With streaming, we can listen to whatever we want, when we want, so pop culture is disconnected from the discomfort of listening all the way through what is a curated slash artistic experience. If you want to make hits these days, you need to be fast to market. It's my assumption that there's a cottage industry of songwriters out there generating material that they are trying to sell to solo artists. It's easier to sell and produce a song to a solo artist than it is to a band, an actual group of musicians. Solo artists are more performers than they are musicians. Controversial statement, David. So you can be quicker to market. And Davey Mack, who we heard from also about the video games, responded to that saying, I could be wrong, but in the mainstream, I feel like albums have been secondary to singles for as long as there's been popular music. I mean, you've got Dick Clark's American Bandstand with teens dancing to top 40 singles. Then Total Request Live in the 90s and early 2000s. And before all that, you had I'm a Man of Constant Sorrow by the Soggy Bottom Boys being all the rage in 1937, and they never cut a whole album. That last one is a joke. Nice Oh Brother, Where Art Thou reference.
Yeah, right.
That's a great movie and a cool song, too. I do agree, though, that listening to albums as a whole and discussions around them has probably steadily dwindled, and that's likely due to streaming and the way music is consumed now. I used to be an album first person, but in the last year, I can only name like three albums that were released that I listened to all the way through. That makes me kind of sad.
Yeah, I feel kind of sad about that too. I like a well-crafted album with like interludes between songs and, you know, a good rise and fall. And I think that culturally we've gotten away from that, at least what's in the mainstream top 40.
Sure. But Davey Mack is also right, though, that that's been a thing for
forever.
Like, albums as a thought out product is really a product of the rock era, like 60s and later. So like, David, you're a high Gen Xer, right? You are top top level Gen X, pure Gen X.
Sure.
And that era, the era in which you were born, like if you think of the 70s album oriented radio format, people were crafting albums, not singles. There were still singles, but if you think back to the first Beatles albums, some of their biggest hits aren't even on albums at all. They're just singles. So we were there before. We passed through a period in which you cut your teeth, David, and so did Nicole and I a little later with albums, and we're sort of not there, and maybe streaming will bring us back there through
maybe
some
we'll
other
make
weird
a comeback.
Format.
No, it's a really great comment, and I think that like there's a nostalgia there to like sitting and having that listening experience, and that, I think that's what Two Kids, Two Dogs was talking about in your earlier comment. Mm.
And I am mixing an album right now, and maybe I shouldn't be. Maybe I should just do a bunch of singles.
And
right?
Please have them be 45 seconds. We need
songs?
TikTok songs.
Yeah, no, some of them might be excerptable. We'll see.
Nice.
All right.
So our next comment is from Dally V. Thanks so much for doing the podcast on the documentary about SNL music. It was great to hear all of you were as excited about the montage at the beginning as I was when I was watching it. So many memories from watching SNL actually end up being about the people I was watching it with, and I love it for that. And they may have left out the, quote, more cowbell out of the documentary because there's a whole episode on it in the SNL 50 Beyond Saturday Night, which has been really fun to watch. So that was a comment when we were like, how do they ignore more cowbell in this documentary? That's like so iconic. So thanks for pointing out that there's a whole episode about it. And I still sometimes, just for a pick-me-up, will watch the first six minutes of that documentary.
And SNL, you know, comedy is all about context, right? And if you have the nostalgia, it pulls hard.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. Thanks for your comment.
Thanks, Dally. All right. These two related responses come from Discord. This is Rocky Zimb. Says, thought I'd share the video. It's called, by the way, Guitar Talk and Playthrough on the Bullet for my Valentine's YouTube channel, everybody. Rocky says, the lead singers of Trivium and Bullet for my Valentine, metal bands, talk about their music and how they sound and were created. So cool. I love these bands. Thought it may be interesting for how guitar riffs are thought of and iconic for some bands. And then on a similar vein, Joe Herbers says, as a metal fan, I really dig the Thrash It Out podcast. In each episode, they cover one album track by track, from classic metal to hair metal to 90s doom to new metal to modern stuff. So to these two, just like, shout out podcast you love. Love it. I did watch the, some of that video Rocky submitted, and it was awesome. I just wanted to read this comment just to highlight. Oh, my God. It's two guitarists in the band talking about the riffs they write, learning each other's riffs and just nerding out about it. And I just love the transparency of that stuff.
I like that too. And I think that we like gatekeep so much and we think of like, you know, this is my content and I don't want to share it. And
well, and people try to preserve the mystery.
But like, why?
Yeah, these people just love guitar. They love music. They love each other's music.
It's really nice to see people like lifting each other up and to realize that there is space for multiple people in the same lane. So thanks. Keep sending us awesome podcasts to listen to.
And we can't deep dive on the best guitar riffs right now. We probably will one day, though.
I'd love to.
Gonna do it. I've got opinions.
So, right, Mark.
We got one more piece of feedback. And I compiled this feedback. And I promise you, folks, I did not read a single bit of it. Okay. I put it right in the doc.
Do you want me to read it to
you're
you?
You're gonna read it. What is it? What is this feedback?
You may recall, dear listeners, in our barbershop quartet episode where Mark inflames the barbershop community.
Mm-hmm. Made some enemies there.
Made some enemies. He had mentioned that at his wedding, his intention was to sing a barbershop quartet song to his wife.
The Way You Look Tonight.
The Way You Look Tonight. I don't think we knew the title, but...
Now you know.
Now we know. And I had made this comment, I wonder what your wife thought about that and if she liked it. Now, I know Mark's wife. She's very kind. I'm much more sarcastic than she is. And she wrote us in with her thoughts of what she thought about that.
Saving the best or worst for last.
Mark's gonna cry, for sure. This is from Mark's wife. It's funny that this moment of our lives is what's coming up on the podcast, but it felt like there was a lingering question that left unanswered. What does, quote, the wife think about whether or not Mark should have sung Barbershop at our wedding?
Mm-hmm.
I have a few thoughts on this. My first response is, whatever would have felt good to Mark. And I don't mean that as a cop-out, but if he was going to be stressed or not able to enjoy the wedding to its fullest, then I would have been reluctant for him to do it. Like, I know he would have had butterflies, and I know for a fact he wouldn't be able to fully enjoy food and adult beverages starting the day before, and that would be a lot less fun for him and us. And you had mentioned that, too. As to how I would feel about it, I mean, we do have a history of him writing songs and singing them about me or to me, and I can't say that I don't love that a little. Not that I was looking to be more the center of attention than the day already warrants, but this is one special thing that defines moments in our relationship. And now for the question of the music itself. We don't have a particular association with Barbershop specifically, so that would have been different. Maybe not my top choice, but I'm guessing it would have created a new positive association, as quirky as it would have been. I mean, it's not all that different from a cappella, which was our history. But here's what I'll say, all things considered. Perhaps it's a win-win here, because maybe it's the best of all worlds and a classic example of it's the thought that counts. He got bonus points for the idea and the effort, but didn't have to deal with the anxiety or potential awkwardness in the execution. Seems like it worked out for the best, and that just wasn't the right moment. Signed, still going strong after almost 17 years.
Oh, Lord, 17 years. Yeah. Thanks, wife.
And like a heart emoji, too.
Heart emoji, yeah.
So your wife's being very political here.
Diplomatic.
And very diplomatic and giving you a lot of credit that it is the thought that counts. And it was a lovely gesture. In listening to that episode back, I did feel very jaded and snarky and really undermined romance. Yeah. By saying, like, how dare you?
We need people like you to keep me anxious about my previous choices.
No, you made nice choices.
She is right. We talked about it. I would have been super stressed out doing it. Mm. But it is nice that I'm not the one who canceled it, that the bass who had a mental illness breakdown canceling it. Hope you're doing well, buddy. Kind of made it easy. But it is interesting because there's a degree of vulnerability that I would have had that would have stressed me out. But people ask, are you going to write your wife? I mean, I have written songs about her. Mm-hmm. Love of my life. I write songs, of course, right? But would I have written, people like, are you going to write something for the wedding? Are you going to play one of your songs?
Oh.
And the answer to that would be an absolute hell no.
That's a lot of pressure.
Because it also makes it very much about me.
Right.
It's like, look at me. Look at this good song. Oh my God, I'm going to be so stressed out. Like, this was sort of a medium.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to sing this song. It'll be cute. Maybe it'll suck a little bit because I'm so nervous or whatever. But it's... I'm not opening my soft underbelly. This isn't an emotional
like
expression.
It's not like a narcissistic appendage.
Maybe it is. I am a musician, but I'm not exposing myself. I get to keep a shield, which is I didn't write this song.
Yeah.
Right?
I love the idea of it.
Yeah.
I think that maybe for your 20th anniversary, get the gang back together and perform our barbershop quartet of The Way You Look Tonight.
Or maybe use the current gang. Should I do a fourth wave ska pop song.
Yeah, Slackademics involved.
Slackademics involved, yeah.
Awesome. It was really lovely to hear that feedback. Thanks to your wife for writing in.
Thanks, everybody.
I love to hear her perspective. And thanks, everyone, for your feedback. Please keep listening. Don't forget to give us a rating or review. Check us out wherever you get your podcasts. Email us more feedback at nevermusicpod@gmail.com. Send us ideas for season 2. We're starting to get cooking on that. We'd love to hear what you think. And tell a friend about our podcast. We'd love you to spread the word.
Dope. Thanks, everybody. Nevermind the Music is hosted by me, Mark Poppany, and Nicole Thatcher. I also produce the podcast. Please be sure to subscribe and leave us a rating and a review.
Let us know what you think on social media. We're Never Music Pod on all major platforms. Mark, why are we not Never Mind the Music? That would make way more sense.
Never Mind the Music is one or two characters too long for X. Cannot have an X handle that's over 15. I think it's 16 or 17 characters. And Never Mind Music, already taken. Shout out to whoever Never Mind Music is.
I hope you're doing great things. You can email us, I guess, at nevermusicpod@gmail.com. And every so often, we'll do a mailbag episode where we'll answer all of your burning questions. So if you have any questions about our Twitter handle or X handle, let us know. Thanks for listening.